Hallelujah. Christ is risen.
He is risen.
Where to start? What shall I focus on? It's such a difficult choice for a sermon, but particularly on Easter Sunday of all days. I could talk about my own journey towards a stronger, more adult faith. This was very much focused around exploring the historical evidence for the resurrection. And as I did this, as I explored, I became more convinced than ever that the resurrection of Jesus was an event in history, something that had really happened. For some time in my early 20s, I'd been drawn back to the stories and the person of Jesus, which I'd learnt about in my childhood, and perhaps gently sidelined in my late teens. And I wanted to really get to grips with it. And I knew that the Easter events were pivotal to the whole Jesus narrative. And so I read, studied, dissected, thought, prayed about them for several weeks. And when I got to the next Easter, I found that I was convinced of the truth of them. And I experienced living through and celebrating the whole festival of Easter with a real assurance and joy. Those events 2,000 years ago, the cross and the resurrection, are at the very heart of history. Indeed, the word crucial derives from the Latin word for cross, something that's right at the heart of history, right at the heart of our human experience. As St. Paul said, if the resurrection didn't happen, we Christians are to be the most pitied because we'd be deluded. But the truth is, they did, and this changes our lives forever. But I decided I didn't want to talk about me or St. Paul this morning. Instead, I'd like to focus, as our gospel reading did that Harriet just shared with us, upon Mary Magdalene. In a newspaper interview this week, Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, said that the church exists to help bad people to get to know God. During Lent, many of us have been reading a book by Dave Tomlinson and have drawn inspiration from the knowledge that we're not alone in feeling that we are bad or not very good Christians. Very many others do. If you haven't read the book, by the way, you might like to. A lot of people have, and I've had some very positive feedback from it. I put the title on the white notice sheet if anybody's interested. But Mary was someone who was very conscious of the fact that she was bad, very conscious of the fact that Jesus had rescued her. She was a woman who'd lived as an outcast in her community, probably as a prostitute, and no respectable person wished to be associated with Mary Magdalene. And it was Jesus who had drawn her into a new sort of community, his new community, where people who felt they were nothing were greatly valued because they were of infinite worth. A community where the poor were rich, where the humble were lifted up, where the sick were healed, and where the tormented found peace. And it was wonderful for her, being with Jesus and his other followers, witnessing his healings, hearing his sermons, perhaps sharing in the giant picnics like the feeding of the 5,000. 3 amazing years until suddenly it all went horribly wrong. On Palm Sunday, everything had seemed so good. And now, a week later, she was taking perfumes and spices to the grave of Jesus, still haunted by the memories of the flogging, the humiliation, and the agony of the crucifixion, trying desperately to hold herself together. It was as much as Mary could do to hold on, to keep going. I'm sure that she felt that her world had completely fallen apart. And to cap it all, on her way into the garden, there was the second earthquake in 3 days. And then, what could possibly get worse? The tomb was empty. The stone pushed back. The body she'd come to look after and to prepare for its final burial had gone. One can only guess the desperate feelings that swept over Mary Magdalene as she went back to fetch Peter and John to come and see what had happened. And we read that Peter and John came running, but after looking into the tomb, they returned to their lodgings. Mary, however, remained, weeping, standing just outside the tomb. And as she stood there, she was approached by a man who she assumed was the gardener. It's a wonderful encounter, this. Every time I hear it, it sort of gives me goosebumps. My imagination just replays this wonderful encounter of Mary with the person she thought was the gardener. And the conversation, of course, hinged on that moment when Jesus used her name, Mary. And she knew immediately that, astonishingly, inexplicably at that moment, she was in the presence of Christ. She was talking to Jesus. Jesus was actually there with her. So Mary had this very privileged, individual encounter with the risen Jesus. It was a personal experience, of course, but it illustrates a very important truth about the Easter story. People who try, as I did, to dissect the events of Easter tend to focus on the tomb and what happened to the body, and the fact that the tomb was empty apart from some grave clothes, as our Easter garden tomb is. But the empty tomb on its own is not evidence of resurrection. It points to it, but it's not on its own evidence of resurrection. But what is very powerful evidence of the resurrection are the personal encounters recorded in the Bible, and indeed mentioned by other contemporary historians outside of the Bible, of Mary, the disciples, and several hundred other people over the next 6 weeks before Jesus physically left the earth, meeting with Jesus, encounters that had a transforming effect on all of them. We read in the passage that John saw the empty tomb, understood, and believed. He wrote this in the passage that Harriet read to us. But we know that for Simon Peter and the others, these events of Easter morning were not a source of joy initially, but a source of even greater bewilderment and fear. We read that later in the day they were still hiding behind locked doors because they were afraid of the Jews, until the moment that Jesus appeared and stood with them. And then it was that Simon Peter finally understood. He finally got it, and he made one of his great professions of faith. And subsequently in the Gospels, we read of Jesus appearing to many of his followers, up to 500 at one time, it is recorded, with great moments of enrichment and affirmation to strengthen and inspire them to move forward in their lives. And it's in these 6 weeks that these frightened, defeated people were transformed into the bold, confident nucleus of the early church, taking the story of Jesus to all of the known world, being prepared to accept imprisonment and martyrdom for a faith in which they were convinced, a faith in the risen Jesus. But finally, back to Mary Magdalene, whom we left talking with Jesus in the garden. from the depths of despair, her joy and her confidence were restored. And we sense from the text that she physically embraced Jesus because he said to her, "Don't hold on to me, but go to my brothers and tell them what has happened." And we all know that feeling, don't we, of wanting to keep holding on. As a child, perhaps as an adult as well, some of us, we never want to let Christmas Day or our birthday end. But they do, and we have to let go of them. But we keep the memories and the gifts too. After that precious moment, a moment which was so enriching and affirming of all that Mary Magdalene had come to believe, she had to let go. But it wasn't a letting go to slump backwards, but a letting go for her to move on, to go and share the love, the enrichment, the strengthening, the affirmation with the other disciples. And this is how it is with our God. This is how it is with Jesus. Sometimes we have a heightened experience of God's presence with us, and then we have to move on, taking what we have felt and learned from the experience with us. Many of the 40 or 50 of us who gathered here on Good Friday morning had a rich spiritual experience as we listened to Jane and Martin Dines reading passages from the Bible and meditations about the crucifixion. And as they did so, our eyes were transfixed by a 10-foot-high plain cross that was erected here in the chancel, with nails scattered round it. For many of us, we found it very moving, and a fresh insight into God's love for us and the horror of the sacrifice that Jesus had made. And the Easter story is like that. Each year, as we engage with it, we're enriched with a fresh understanding and a fresh insight. Sometimes, as with Mary Magdalene, this comes to us as a great source of joy, a relief after a period when we've been through a hard time, perhaps a spiritually dry time, when we've perhaps wondered where God is in our lives, in our world, in everything. Sometimes it's the Good Friday experience, the experience of loss and separation, that makes Easter Sunday more meaningful, sometimes indeed unexpectedly joyful. The words which keep occurring in these last chapters of the Gospels are these: "Don't be afraid," and "Shalom," or "Peace be with you." In showing the depths of his love for us on that first Easter, by addressing our need to be freed from sin and guilt on Good Friday, and then demonstrating mastery over death on Easter Sunday, Jesus has provided for our very deepest personal needs. One of the many special verses in the Bible is Luke 2, verse 20, which another Mary, who had just given birth, is recorded as pondering, thinking deeply and reflectively about the things that had happened. Mary pondered these things deeply in her heart, we're told. And that's really what I think the challenge of Easter is for us. Not just to let it pass by in a whirl of chocolate eating, but to actually take the different steps of the story and ponder them. And like Mary Magdalene, draw great strength and inspiration from them. And like Mary Magdalene and the disciples, allow them to inspire and empower us as we ponder them, embrace them, and move on in their strength. Hallelujah! Christ is risen.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah! Christ is risen.
Hallelujah.